And now it's time for Stages.
Stages.
All the world's a stage.
It's where we talk about
all things
theatrical.
It's about theatre.
Theatre makers.
If it's performing on a stage, we've got it for you here on Stages.
It's about half an hour long.
Okay, let's get on with the show.
Hello and welcome to Stages. I'm Regina Botstras and we are here to talk about theatre. A little later on in the show, Tricia Stars will be giving us some things to catch online or in the theatre. How about that? Things are certainly opening up. But in the meantime, each week we are talking with someone from the theatre industry about their life and how they got started, how they sustain it. And tonight we are talking with Thomas Campbell. He's an actor graduating from NIDA in 2002. He's been across so many stages and involved in so many theatre companies since, including Sydney Theatre Company, Griffin, Bell Shakespeare, Siren Theatre Company, Ensemble, Darlinghurst Theatre, and on the list goes. And he's here to talk about his acting life with us this evening. I'm very much looking forward to it. And here's a little bit of On the Stoop. They're playing this weekend online with Sus. Well, Thomas Campbell is an award-winning actor. He's been across so many stages. He's also been on TV and in podcasts and film. And he's here this evening to talk with us about his life in the theatre. Welcome, Thomas.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for coming on. So before we get into what's happening now, I often try to get a sense of where you come from. Like, do you come from a creative family? What was it like for you growing up?
Well, my mum's a registered nurse and my dad was a salesperson, so there was nothing really creative in my house. I think my mum played the guitar occasionally at Christmas. but I was born in Melbourne, but I moved to Tasmania when I was seven, and we never had a television. So I would just listen to the radio, and I would, with my pocket money as a kid, buy soundtracks to musicals. I was just always obsessed with musical theatre. And there was a production of Les Miserables, the big amateur theatre company in Tasmania did a production of Les Mis, and I saw it when I was about 12. And previous to that, we'd flown back to Melbourne for a trip and I'd seen Phantom of the Opera. So they were two kind of big turning points for me. I was like, I really want to be a part of this kind of theatrical world. So I kind of grew up in Hobart where there was pretty limited theatre. We'd get an occasional kind of Bell Shakespeare tour, but it was really just the amateur theatre that I saw. I went to a high school from 7 to 10, and then there was a well-known college called Rosny College where Essie Davis went that always had a really strong drama department. So I thought I'd go there, and I left all my friends. Not one person from my high school went there, but I just kind of had that drive to really want to act. And so I spent 2 years studying. It was really fantastic. It wasn't a drama dependent, like it was just had a strong drama department. And then just immersed myself, like did lighting design, did set design, acted, did publicity, costume design, just kind of really immersed myself in it. And then at the end of year 12, you know, everyone auditioned for the big schools on the mainland. That's what we called it in Tasmania. And I really wanted to go to Whopper and do musical theatre. But I was very young. I was 17 and a half. I was barely even in year 12, you know. I would have been in the year below if I was born 6 days later. So I was really young for my year. And so I auditioned for all the schools, didn't get anywhere with Whopper or VCA, and always just thought NIDA was going to be too shiny and too many pretty people. I think that was the vibe I got, that NIDA was the, you know, the pinnacle of... And I think because I just had no expectations when I went into that audition and I was so young, I thought, oh, well, I won't get in anyway. I just had an abandon maybe to what I did, and all of a sudden I got shortlisted, but they said, you won't get in. We'll have a look at you probably next year. But then they changed their mind and I moved to Sydney to start NIDA at 17 and a half, you know, straight after year 12. And that's kind of where my professional career started.
Is that a key to acting? Do you think there is some element of abandonment?
Absolutely. You know, you've got to be comfortable. I think that's a major thing. You know, that's our major Inhibition is an act of feeling awkward or worrying about other things. So, you first of all have to feel comfortable, but I think great acting comes when you are really, you don't give a fuck.
Yeah.
to put it in simple terms. Yeah. But, yeah, definitely abandonment's the key.
So I know that you went and did a postgraduate diploma in musical theatre quite a bit later. What do you think it is that drew you initially to that world, and what is it that musical theatre does?
Well, look, musical theatre can be really daggy and on the nose and not amazing. But when it is amazing, what it does, I think it's that thing that everyone says, you know, when a person breaks into song, they're at the height of emotion, just can really move you, you know. And when something's crafted really well, like a Sondheim musical or a Jason Robert Brown, which is a kind of more modern composer, you know, there's brilliant acting performances within musicals. I mean, I do get carried away by the dancing and the colours and the lights and movement like anyone else, but... Yeah, I love straight theatre as well, but whenever I go to New York, I just see Broadway musicals.
Mm. Yeah, everything is a musical these days. There's sort of a new resurgence recently.
Well, I'm hoping. I've been having a chat with a few friends recently, you know, after this very hard time for the world, you know, 100 years ago this happened, and then there was the Roaring Twenties full of comedy and musicals. So I'm hoping that happens again.
When was the earliest musicals?
Well, as I said, I didn't have a TV when I was growing up, and I remember if we were babysat by our neighbour Eileen in Richmond in Melbourne, she was obsessed with The Sound of Music and Shirley Temple films. So I think because you always want what you don't have, so I would just go and sit on her couch and watch. I think I saw The Sound of Music at least 100 times before I was 7. So I think that was a bit of a trigger.
Mm. But historically, it's not film. It is on stage. That was sort of the beginning of musical. Do you know, like, the history of musicals?
Well, Gilbert and Sullivan, I suppose, started the modern musical, and that was kind of British music hall, and then that kind of started to move over to Broadway. So it would be the early 1900s where the modern musical really took off. But I suppose music hall would be
Do you have a favorite that you've been in yourself that you've performed as part of?
No, I haven't done enough. It's still my driving force to do more music theater.
Yeah, or maybe one that you've seen then.
Yeah, Into the Woods is probably my overall favorite. And there's a new a musical by Jason Robert Brown called Parade, which is really fantastic as well. But that was when I did that postgrad in London. You know, I was living my fame dream, and I just got to immerse myself in this dream for a year. It's funny.
Is it? It's something that you have to be. I mean, you have to be bigger often in stage, but is it even bigger in musicals? You've got singing, you've got dancing, and you've got to act as well.
Yeah, I mean, when I studied it for a year, you know, because my career previous to that was, you know, straight plays, a bit of TV, a bit of film, a bit of Shakespeare. I really tried to bring in this kind of the same energy I brought to just a play without music. And I learned over that year it doesn't really work. You kind of have to have more of a solid base as an actor to kind of and create off the top of. Because if you're surrounded by other performers that are giving a musical theatre performance and you're doing something a little more real or modern or naturalistic, it kind of looks like you don't know what you're doing, I discovered. Even though you were kind of quite calculated in what you were doing, you kind of really have to look at the people around you and be in the same production, otherwise it doesn't really work. So in that sense, yeah, there is a bit of a style. It's just a bit more centred, I suppose.
Wow. So was that a pivotal point for you, or was there something in your development that was, you know, yes, I can survive or partly survive or grasp, you know, on to be an actor, like, you know, was there a turning point for you in your career?
Well, I kind of look at my career because I've been doing it a long time. I graduated 18 years ago, and, you know, people fall by the wayside, and there are people that were in my year at NIDA that are really successful and earning a lot of money, and I've had little peaks and troughs in my career, so I'm kind of glad there wasn't a huge moment that turned for me. I've just kind of kept going, and there's been enough to feed the fire that I haven't gone, I don't want to do this anymore, there's been enough money at times to kind of keep me going. So it's been a longevity thing for me, as opposed to a moment where I thought, oh, I'm going to do this forever. In a sense, I'm just still doing it, and I don't really realize why. I love it, and I'm lucky to be still doing it. But yeah, there hasn't been a moment where I went, oh, now I'm an actor. It's just kind of continued to go on. Yeah.
Mm. You're listening to Stages, and I am talking with actor Thomas Campbell. Did you have a mentor or someone that was instrumental in helping you at different points in your career?
Yeah, I suppose, you know, throughout school, there was always drama teachers that I aligned myself with that were always really supportive. I mean, that school in Hobart, Rosny College, there was a teacher called Keith Bates, who was a bit of a mentor for all of us, and got a lot of people into the drama schools on the mainland. He actually directed that production of Les Mis that I saw when I was in high school. So,
wow.
And he directed, I always talk, because in my year, Robin McCleavy is a really well-known actor. She's my best friend. We're in the same year at Rosny, and we always kind of, we did these amazing plays, and he'd kind of give us line readings. And a lot of the time, I don't think we really knew what we were talking about at 15, 16, 17 years of age, but we were giving performances. So we kind of gave these really huge over-the-top performances because he got them out of us. And I always thought that's why I've always been aligned with theatre, because I kind of knew what it was to give a theatrical performance from his training.
How did he do that?
He yelled at us. He yelled at us. And he chose kind of interesting plays that I don't think most, you know, year 10, 11, 12 kids would be doing. You know, we did The Beggar's Opera, Our Country's Good by Timberlake Werdemaker. We did The School for Scandal. So we did these kind of big plays. So, yeah, so definitely him. And then once I got to NIDA, a lot of teachers at NIDA. And kind of post-NIDA, I mean, of course, I've worked with the director, Kate Gall, numerous times, and we have an amazing working relationship and a shorthand, which is something that, you know, is so, so important, I think, especially for theatre, because you've got, you know, we trust each other, so I can be very playful and work with that abandon we were talking about in a rehearsal room, and therefore come up with more, for me, inventive performances, and I'm not hemmed in by working with someone I don't know. So she's definitely a mentor in that sense as well in the more recent years.
Is that relationship, can you tell me a little bit more about that? Like, how is it to work regularly with someone? Because we don't really have ensembles, as far as I know. I could be wrong. But it is more about those relationships, and how, I imagine.
Yeah, I mean, Kate is also from Tasmania, so I always kind of knew of her. She'd gone to NIDA and done the directing course a few years before I went. And then when I graduated, she was working at Belvoir Street and doing all these great productions. And Kate is just one of those wonderful people that even if she's working professionally and is really busy, she just goes and sees everything. So she saw all the independent shows I did for the first two or three years when I graduated. And I remember her coming up to me at the old Darlinghurst Theatre, which is the Hayes now. One night she said, I finally get to meet you. I really want to work with you soon. And she cast me in a show at the Ensemble in 2005. So we did probably three shows before I moved to London, went to London for 3 years, and then we picked up where we left off when I returned. But, you know, when you're working with someone like that so much, you obviously have to get on as friends as well, and our relationship has developed into really close mates as well. So we support each other, we find work that we might want to do together, and just we always kind of come from a point of like, what can we do together, because we know we're going to have a great time plus push each other.
So tell me a bit more about what it was like to live in London and live the fame life and how different maybe it is to here.
It was incredible. I mean, I remember I was doing a QTC Bell Shakespeare show at the Opera House. We're doing the Sydney section of the season, Titus Andronicus. Mm-hmm. And I remember just kind of sitting there, I think I was 26 at the time, and I looked around and I went, I don't want to jump forward in 10 years' time and regret not traveling. And I was like, I could happily just sit in Sydney and have the career I'm having, play here, play there, TV here, but I think I'll regret it in 10 years' time if I don't go overseas and have an experience overseas. And because I don't have an ancestry visa or anything that will help me get over there, I just thought I'm going to get a youth mobility visa. And then I looked into some study because that would allow me to stay for another year. So I just, it kind of just all happened really suddenly. And I landed in London. I knew no one and started this course. But, you know, it's like, I mean, it's like theatre on crack. I mean, you're walking around London and there's just theatres everywhere. It's like Broadway. They're the two places that just make you so happy with all the lights out the front of theatres. It's also just a bigger, more broad industry, you know. There are incredible shows you'll see at the National Theatre. There will be some woeful shows you'll see at the National Theatre. So it's just, it's kind of just a bigger version of what we have here. I did, when I returned after being there for 3 years, I think I saw a show at the Griffin and it blew my mind. And I went, oh, God, Australia really does have the best of it. You know, it's smaller and it's got a bit more of a narrow vision, but it really does have extreme talent in all fields. And it was really, it was a really great moment to come back and see something and go, oh, no, we do it brilliantly here.
What was that show?
Between Two Waves by Ian Meadows at Griffin. And it was literally just after I got back. I think I got back in October and it was on in October. So it was the first thing I saw. I don't remember much about it apart from just walking out going, yes. Yay, I'm happy to be home.
So what are you doing now then? How are things theatre-wise for you?
What am I doing right now?
Apart from talking to me.
Well, theatre-wise, end of last year I finished doing HMS Pinafore for the Hayes Theatre that Kate Gall directed, and we had a successful season at the Hayes, and then we did a regional New South Wales tour, and that actually wrapped up about 4 days before the lockdown. I remember we were in Port Macquarie and Scott Morrison kept on saying, no, only 500 people can be in a room, no, only 200, and I thought we're not going to get this last show in, but we did. And then I got back to Sydney and that's when lockdown started. Yeah, I mean, I wrote a play in January that was going to go on at the Edinburgh Fringe Festival, so that would have actually just finished yesterday if we'd been over in Edinburgh. It was a one-man show kind of based upon my dad had a stroke many years ago, and it was a play kind of touching on that and what it is to be, you know, human and lonely, because he was basically trapped in a room for 4 years, you know, a pretty horrific end of his life. So I always wanted to write something. And we still had workshops to do and it was only kind of in second draft. So that could still possibly happen next year.
Mm.
I've been doing a few workshops on Zoom, a couple of, like, I did a new musical workshop out at Penrith as soon as we were allowed to go outside again. But, it's, you know, it doesn't feel that different. I think, in a sense, artists are lucky, to put a positive spin on it, that our lives are very kind of up and down. We don't really know when we're going to be working or not. So this period of not doing anything, well, I'll speak personally, you know, yes. I'm used to having that experience.
Yeah.
So I haven't found it that traumatizing, or I've actually quite enjoyed the stop and the ability to kind of write and do things like that.
Have you done much writing? Was that the first play that you've written about your father?
It's my first kind of full-length play. I've written lots of, like, cabaret bits and character work and stuff like that, and I've written a few kind of little pilot TV things that never went anywhere, but it's my first full-time sit down by yourself and write it out with no one looking at it until it's done.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's still got a ways to go, and that was always going to happen. The workshop was going to happen, but that had to go on hold as well once it kicked in.
So what do you think is important to survive as a creator or as an actor?
Because I teach a bit, not all the time. I used to teach heaps, but I pulled back from that a bit. I always just say be versatile. And not just as an actor, because I think versatility is really underrated in this country. I think, you know, people like to pigeonhole people, and I've always prided myself on being an actor that if I can't do something, I'll have a good crack at it, and I'll throw myself into roles that I don't have any idea how I'm going to approach them, because I think I always have looked at actors that are versatile and have thought they were the best. So not only in that sense being versatile, but just being versatile in your career. Like, don't limit yourself to just theatre, or, you know, really kind of broaden your horizons of what you can do. And in a sense, I think I'm proof that, you know, you keep going in that sense. You don't just go, oh, I only want to be in American films, or I only want to be on Australian TV. You know, keep exploring different avenues to perform in. And not, and in a sense, also my dad always used to say, because his best friend was one of the resident lighting designers for Melbourne Theatre Company in the 80s and 90s. And my dad was like, in the olden days, actors would do a show and then they'd stage manage the next show and then they, you know, do publicity or be in the office, you know, and there was no shame in that, to just be kind of within an industry. It wasn't like, I'm only an actor and I won't do anything else. And in the last couple of years, a good friend of mine, Celeste Barber, has kind of started to do well as a comedian around the world. And, you know, she gave me the opportunity. She asked me if I'd go on tour with her. And so I got to tour manage and learn about walking into theatres in middle America and running a tour from that point of view. And I loved that. You know, I said to my agent, I'm going to not be in Australia for 2 months. And if anything comes through, I'm going to say no, because I just want to have that experience of traveling the world and learning something new. And I think that's really liberating as an actor as well, just to kind of don't be so narrow-minded or, you know, single-focused about what you think acting is or the experience of an artist is, because if you do that, you're not going to succeed.
Mm. So how was it walking into Middle America? With
Well, strangely, we were on a tour bus. I mean, that was the other thing. Like, we had this 12-bunk tour bus for two of us. We felt like we were Janet Jackson. It was great.
Wow.
And we started in Seattle and we went to 26 cities and we'd walk into these beautiful old theatres in Wichita and Iowa City and, you know, Dallas. It was incredible. And in Trump's America, it's interesting. You kind of imagine that the Middle America is going to be racist and right-wing, and I'm sure some people are, but...
Not the ones going to the theatre, maybe.
Yeah, well, exactly. That's very true. But, yeah, I had a great time and what an experience. I mean...
Yeah, way to travel. Well, Thomas Campbell, thank you so much for joining me. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Thanks for having me.
Well, that was Thomas Campbell. He's an award-winning actor and now writer. Coming up shortly, Trisha Starrs will be joining us to give us some What's On. Trisha Starrs.
Hello, Regina. Let's talk What's On in Sydney. Well, first up, Redline Productions has announced that Alexander Berlage, Catherine Van Davies and Constantine Costi will join the company as part of the new artistic directorate of the Old Fitz Theatre. Now, the executive team of Andrew Henry and Vanessa Wright say that these appointments are very important because the small team is currently working beyond capacity. And these three people are really going to bring some new energy to the Old Fitz Theatre. Oh, Regina, do you remember Alexander Berlage from American Psycho and Crybaby? He is amazing. Catherine Van Davies, oh, just recently in Hungry Ghosts and No Pay, No Way. And, of course, the wonderful Constantine Costi from the Opera Australia's La Traviata on Sydney Harbour. These three artists are really going to help out the Old Fitz Theatre with its new way for 2021, because it doesn't look like the Old Fitz is going to open this year, because as you know, Regina, it only seats about 60 people and that just isn't going to cut it under COVID-19 restrictions. Now, if you want more information about Redline Productions or the Old Fitz Theatre, just go to www.redlineproductions.com.au. Now, in other news, Subtle Nuance is inviting writers to submit expressions of interest for a new multi-playwright project called Morning Star. Now, each writer, after initially working on an individual piece, will collaborate with the director, that's right, whoever that is, the director, to combine the different pieces into a single cohesive work of art. Now, this project is inviting writers to explore the phenomena of pernicious ideas. Yes, that's right, Regina, pernicious ideas. shows. And submissions close on the 30th of September 2020. So for more information about Morningstar, go to www.subtlenuance.com. Now, Regina, there is some really exciting news from Kip Williams, the Artistic Director of Sydney Theatre Company. They have announced that they will return to the stage next month with Angus Sereny's brilliant new play, Wanangatta, starring Wayne Blair and Hugo Weaving. Now, the season was programmed in the Drama Theatre at the Sydney Opera House, but is going to be showed instead at Rosalind Packer Theatre from the 21st of September until the 31st of October. And the reason for this, Regina, is that at Rosalind Packer, it seats 880 seats per night, but in this production, it will only seat 147 per night in that huge Rosalind Packer Theatre. But I'm so glad that they are going ahead with this production under COVID-19 guidelines. They are also going to put on Rules for Living and The Picture of Dorian Gray later in the year, but unfortunately, The Wharf Review 2020 and A View from the Bridge has definitely been cancelled for 2020. Thanks, Regina. Without him, the world
around me changes. The trees are bare and dead. Thanks, Trisha Starrs. Well, something that has come up a couple of times for me in the last week is Traverse Theatre in Edinburgh have their online festival. It's usually part of Edinburgh Fringe, and the Traverse Theatre has seen the likes of so many people like Bill Nighy, Timothy Dalton, Billy Connolly, Simon Callow, Stephen Burkhoff, later Tilda Swinton, Alan Cummings, and so many to mention that have come through that theatre, and it's online now. So things are free or almost, although you're encouraged, obviously, to give a donation if you can. But I've just had a quick look through, and there is so much to see or be a part of, or workshops, or contribute your story. I mean, it's really worth getting on to the traverse.co.uk website and having a look there. Thanks to Kate Gall, who posts every Monday her, you know, suggested things, but I had heard about this one before. Really a fantastic festival to check out if you can. Well, that's it from me. I'm Regina Botros, and you've been listening to Stages. Thanks, Trisha Starrs, and also to our guest this evening, Thomas Campbell. Get out to the theatre or get online. You've been listening to SER. Keep well.
But the companies are making squeals and charging by the hour in the war of terror. In a war of terror, we terrify the oceans, we terrify the birds, we terrify the trees, we terrify the world. We're not in a war of terror. In a war of terror. In a war of terror. And we've got a world in handcuffs, and we're tied in the screws.